Step right up.
That's a good way to start a podcast. You hit your funny bone.
Oh, man.
Why are you in excruciating pain all of a sudden?
I just hit my funny bone.
Well, I wish I had a sound effect I could just play like a or whatever, like a car horn.
Yeah. It's...
Look up this funny bone like I'm a shitty AM radio person.
Or it's like the DJ that makes that sound. It's like bam, 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 bam.
The air horn
sound. Is that the air horn?
Yeah, that's every single podcast in person ever. Oh, I don't have one of those hooked up because I'm not a douchebag. Welcome, everybody. This is the final episode of March of the Pigs. How do you feel about that?
Being
the final guest on the podcast I've had for almost 3 years now.
I think it's appropriate because I'm the final person in your life.
Oh my god. am I gonna die tonight? The final person? Like, I'm never gonna meet any other people?
You ain't had no life before me.
And apparently not after either.
Yep.
What is that about? I gotta be murdered now?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. You really did it, your funny bone. Not.
It really hurts.
I'm sure you're fine.
But
did it score points on your watch? Did it count as calories burned?
I think it did. I closed my rings.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
My Apple Watch.
Now look, some people in the apartment believe the rings have been closed plenty over the last few years. So yeah, it's the final March of the Pigs, and I've decided I say it like there's a team of people behind me. It's just me. And I've discussed it with you, but...
I'm right here.
Yeah, this is the final March of the Pigs. I decided, and I guess slight announcement, if you've been under a rock or don't know how things work, I guess I shouldn't say that because I probably get an email every day or a Facebook comment or something or an Instagram from people who are just like, when's the show coming back? Guess what? It ain't. It's not coming back. So there will be no new episodes of Ginormous Food. Shocker. Did that come as a surprise to you at all when that news came through? We found out about...
I'm surprised you got a second season. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my god.
Just kidding.
Brutal.
No, I'm not surprised.
Because it sucked so bad.
No. I'm not saying because of you. I just from what you've told me, I don't know if numbers matter. I don't know if it's a agenda that they're trying to push certain people or, you know, certain time slots aren't available and other people want them that are more important. The merger, there's a million things, but honestly,
shrugging your shoulders.
Oh, sorry. No,
it's going, meh.
No, but meh. It didn't seem like they were doing everything possible to, you know, market and
make the show successful
in every possible way. So I don't know. You can only do so much. And I think you did a great job. Well, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's not really in your hands. And, you know, you can always tell as an audience member, just viewer, you know, who they're really supporting and who they're pushing and just from who they give them more time to and social media attention to. So,
well, it's interesting that you say that too, because now that the show has been done, I mean, the show has, for all intents and purposes, been done since September. Because we stopped filming in September, and then the holiday episodes came out, and there really wasn't a whole lot of
push.
No, there was no push. There were no ads. There was no advertising.
Right.
They snuck them out. They bounced them back and forth between Food Network and Travel Channel.
Yeah.
So we were like literally the redheaded stepchild show on the on both networks, and I think you're right. I think you know you kind of saw that they got really behind Casey and Man vs. Food. They got behind some of their other new shows. Guy's next big project yielded a couple winners, and those new shows immediately jumped in the time slots we were on Food Network. So
yeah.
Regardless of what happened, I think everybody's I started to say it was surprised me was after that kind of revealed itself and after my contract ran out, it's amazing how many people in the business came to me and were like, yeah, that's not a surprise. Like it sort of generally feels like this unspoken feeling about Scripps is that they just don't know what the fuck they're doing. Like they had this way of doing things for the longest time that was the way they did things and the way it worked. And despite the fact that when they picked up our show originally, they said, well, we're trying to reformat the whole network. We're trying to do things differently. We don't want to do a million competition shows. We don't want to do a million processing. And like, here's how you make nachos at home for the Super Bowl. Like they didn't want to do a lot of that.
Right.
They still just didn't get away from any of that.
Yeah.
And all of their marketing and all of their push went to shows like Beat Bobby Flay and Triple D and Food Network Star. And they kept piloting new stars and new shows, and they all just kind of went nowhere.
Yeah.
So I think it's obvious when you have people that have, I mean, some of the new pilots they ran were with stars way bigger than me, people that had way bigger fan bases and followings than me, and their shows didn't even do half the ratings we did.
Yeah.
So it just tells you that they, you know, they had a lot of trouble figuring out how to launch new programs and get them to work over an extended period of time. And then the merger happened and all the shit hit the fan. And I don't think if you talk to anyone over there right now, you could get a straight answer as to what direction the network is moving in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the feedback I've gotten from every company that I've talked to. So, I mean, the good news is we had a great run. I mean, for the first show to run 3 seasons, 24 episodes in 12 months and be syndicated globally.
Yeah.
I got to take that as a win.
Yeah. So you did 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Total. Yeah. That's really good for your first show.
Yeah. First thing we ever piloted.
Yeah.
And it went to series, ran for 24 episodes.
Yeah.
And got to travel a good chunk of the country and eat a lot of cool food, meet some cool people.
Yeah, it was a good experience overall.
And the crazy thing is, like, it, you know, when syndication can, I mean, it's on in Canada, it's on in Australia, New Zealand, Food Network Asia, which I think is like Singapore and Thailand and a bunch of like Southeast Asian countries, but I think not China and Japan. And then Food Network UK.
Oh, that's great.
Now we're on somewhere that speaks Spanish. I don't know if it's like Portugal and Spain or if it's South America or Latin America, but I just know I'm getting tagged. Like an Instagram post or whatever from the people that are dubbing it in Spanish. So by the way,
they're dubbing your voice in Spanish.
So if you live in whatever part of the world
hilarious.
That they are dubbing my voice in Spanish, please send me the video of that because I would love footage of my face being dubbed with a Spanish actor's voice.
Yeah, I want to know what they sound like. Is it like a high-pitched voice? Is it a deep voice?
It's got it. They're all deep voices. Wouldn't it be
just a flamboyant gay man doing your voice? That'd be amazing.
He's just like, yo, Caro, what y'all got in these tacos? But in Spanish.
Yeah. That'd be amazing.
I would be the first person to ever be dubbed with a high, effeminately gay voice. I guess that would set me straight, right?
Yeah.
That would let me know.
We do have a lot
up.
Of gay fans.
Yeah, that was an interesting twist to come. I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm the new Kathy Griffin.
Yeah.
I'm the new old Kathy Griffin, not the new Kathy Griffin.
Queen of the gays.
Yeah, I'm the new ginger queen of the gays.
Yeah.
Welcome to my kingdom. I am your new ruler, gays.
I would have never guessed. I didn't know.
Get the fuck out of here.
I didn't know because years ago when like if we were in West Hollywood and there were men checking you out, I'd be like, shut up. You're just They're full of it. That's probably the person behind you. And you'd be like, no, they're eye fucking me.
What about that giant man at the revolver that time? Yeah, and you didn't believe that was a thing.
Yeah, I just didn't. I was like, I don't get it. Like, no offense, but I didn't think anything you were putting out vibe wise. Like, you don't dress like you're wearing, you most of the time you wear.
I was wearing the pink and orange and pink.
Oh, well, that's your fault then.
Sure.
Yes.
But you kidding. Love that shirt. You picked it out.
No, I know. But normally.
You fed me right funny. To the lions.
No, but normally you're wearing like, you know, like baseball caps and, you know, just like jeans or sweatpants and a t-shirt. Like nothing that.
Apparently that's what's doing it for
Yeah,
me.
I didn't really think it was like you were putting out a vibe of like, come fuck me. But like, I guess gay guys, like you, yeah, you're what they want. I never thought that's, I don't just think never I'm, thought, yeah.
I don't think I'm putting out a vibe of come fuck me either. I just think they,
well, you have a beautiful face.
That's what they're doing. That's what they did. But you didn't believe me.
I mean, you do have a nice,
this guy was 6'12".
Yeah.
And he was probably 400 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay. Put it this way. Is like in the Jurassic Park when you're like, that's got to be the biggest dinosaur, right? And then In the third act, this fucking super dinosaur comes out and eats that fucking dinosaur. And you're like, shit, I didn't even know they made those. That was the gay guy that was eye fucking me at Revolver.
So if you're a, are you a bear?
Yes. This guy was a super bear.
Yeah. What is he? Just
super polar bear.
Super bear? Okay.
Man, bear, pig. I don't know what he was, but he was.
Yeah. I was like, if you're a bear.
He was a bigger, meaner bear. He was the bear from. The
what?
God damn it.
What?
He was the bear from the snow movie with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah. The bear that attacked him.
Yeah. What was the movie called?
Oh, The Revenant?
Yes. It was The Revenant Bear.
The Revenant Bear, yeah.
Yeah. That thing was fucking huge.
I was like, oh, I know there's categories, but what is he?
Yeah,
like,
super
what,
bear.
What category is that in?
Yeah. Woolly mammoth is what it is.
Sasquatch.
Elephant.
Elephant.
That's an elephant bear.
Category, yeah.
Yeah, that thing was huge.
All right, well, good for you. Yeah. You got a brand new fan base. Brand new fan base. I say go for it.
Yeah, I got to start doing gay bar. I got to start doing milk it. Is that what you're supposed to do to them? Milk them?
Milk these opportunities.
All right. Well, I'll take some notes from you on how to do that. How do I milk these gentlemen? Just pull on that one udder.
Yeah.
Did you just roll your eyes at my, my penis milk joke?
No, I'm just saying, like, yeah, if they want you to perform places and host stuff, like, why not?
Yeah, perform. I like how you just very vague. Perform places and host stuff.
No, because I'm saying you can do comedy, you can host, you can just make appearances, you can...
And just get titty fucked if the price
titty
is fucked, right.
Yeah, do whatever.
Do men titty fuck other men with their hairy chests and the like?
You know, I don't know.
Call us in at 1-800.
I don't really watch gay porn, but I don't know. I don't know.
I don't believe anybody watches gay porn.
I mean, gays watch gay porn.
I don't
gay
know.
Guys, right?
I've obviously. Never been. We talk about this all the time.
What, gay guys are watching straight porn?
To me, gay porn, gay movies, it's like comedy.
Yeah,
you like,
laugh.
It's so funny to me. I can't take it seriously. Like that, people always ask me that all the time. Like, what would you do if you had to, you were in a movie and you had to kiss another man? I'm like, I couldn't stop.
Couldn't
laughing.
Be in the movie. Actually, just couldn't be in the movie. Really?
Yeah, I'll just have to play a different character that's not sexualized.
You wouldn't get. Yeah, you wouldn't get cast.
Well, I accidentally kissed a man one time, and that we laughed hysterically about it. It was funny.
You can tell the story. Go ahead.
What, the Dennis Gubbins story? Yeah, it wasn't anything crazy. He was trying to run past me in the back hallway of the West Side Comedy Theater because he was fucking around and not hosting the show he was supposed to be hosting. And then I wrapped my setup and he had to run from outside the green room, through the green room, behind the stage and up to the stage. And he was just coming like a freight train.
Oh my God.
And in the hallway, right before you get to the stage, I went to move to the left and he moved to my left at the same time, but kept coming forward.
You guys kiss.
And our lips were like that.
People can't see you.
It didn't go. There was no muh. It was just like that. Like,
right, well.
Like just a little.
Just like a raindrop.
Just mustache on mustache. Just like that.
Okay. Did he like it?
Well, we did both pause and be like, is this a thing now?
Yeah.
Like, what is that? Is this how it happens? We just went, okay.
Yeah.
It was sort of like a fender bender.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, is this an accident or do we both just keep driving?
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen Dennis since then. I assume he's gone full Pacino cruising since then. I just
been avoiding you.
I just assume he just went. I turned him full gay, and now he's on. He's in the underground scene. I just assume didn't he's dancing just, at the Abbey.
Didn't we just see him in that?
Yeah, he was in basketball.
Yeah,
yeah. I forgot he was in that. I think I texted him when we were watching. Was like, hey, I never knew you were in this.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm dancing at the Abbey. I don't have time to text you this. No, I'm kidding. He didn't. I don't know. I would love to see. I would love to see him dance. That's funny. So. Long story short, no more ginormous food, which I think is good. It's finally done. It was a great chapter, but because of ginormous food coming to a close, I kind of feel like March of the Pigs is also due for a swan song, because in a lot of ways, the podcast, and I have to thank Noah Dorsey, who helped me launch this podcast and was kind of like the fan slash listener and eventually friend who came to me and said, like, dude, you need to do a podcast and you should do something food centric since that's all you ever really want to talk about. Well, we started doing that podcast in 2015. And ultimately that's what led to me getting on the radar to get the opportunity to host Ginormous Food. So without Noah and without the start of March of the Pigs, there would be no Ginormous Food. And so that's a big part of it. The other thing about doing March of the Pigs, which I think is kind of a pain in the ass, is just getting, as I've made more prominent friends, and it's amazing how, like, it's almost like in this city, you just need to have credits to be able to socialize with certain groups of people.
Yeah.
There are people that would have never come and done my podcast before, and then now because they can click me on IMDb and I've actually been on television, they're like, yeah, I'll come do your podcast in your apartment.
That's this industry.
It's just...
No, it's true.
Just said that like...
That's this industry. Like, oh, do you have any credits or else why would I
Are you a real person or do you just... Are you just a fat?
Yeah. Do you just eat food?
Do you just,
or do you really...
Oh, they film you? Well, then I can speak to you.
Okay.
Do you have experiences like that in LA?
Every day.
Like
all the time.
You were telling me about one earlier that you have this friend in the... I wouldn't even say friend.
No.
But this person in the business who, like, anytime she thinks that, you know, something, you're up to something that she's not up to, she'll hit you up.
I mean, that's just most people, I think. I genuinely question every friendship at the beginning stages as to why someone wants to be my quote-unquote friend or know me or hang out with me. Because it's always, like... You always pause, like, what do you want from me? Or is this genuine? You know, because, I mean, my friends constantly change. I don't have a consistent friend for very long. And you see this firsthand. But I lose friends constantly. And it's like,
I think it's wild that people will just see you, like, see pictures of you at an award show and think, this is a person who can change my luck professionally. Like, isn't that strange to you? Like, it's not uncommon for people to get invited to award shows.
Yeah, I mean, they don't say it, like, blatantly, but, you know, I'll get people that I haven't talked to in a minute, and they'll reach out to me, and I'll always wonder, like, why the timing of things is happening, and, you know, do they actually want to hang out? Do they follow up? Do they actually make plans with me and then follow up with those plans? What are we talking about while we're hanging out? Is it genuine? Like, because sometimes I think it is. And then all of a sudden, like, they'll disappear. And I'm like, well, okay, I don't know. Sometimes they won't give me reasons. They'll give me, like, vague reasons that don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. That's just this industry. You say it's, like, just LA and
well,
this
that's,
industry.
That's where I feel bad for you is because this is all you know. Like, you're not somebody like most people that lived somewhere else and then moved here.
Yeah.
Like, you've lived in Southern California and particularly the LA area your whole life since you were 3 years old.
Yeah.
So everybody you know is that way. That sucks.
Yeah. So.
It's pretty shitty.
Yeah, I mean, I keep
trying.
Welcome
to Depression Cast, everybody.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, I keep trying. Like,
no, I think you maintain a really good attitude for somebody who, I've said this to you many times. Like, you have the worst luck of anyone. Like, if I thought your luck affected me, I would have murdered you and left you in the desert 6 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I say
because
that
because your luck is horrific.
But I'll tell people that, and I'm sure they think like I'm exaggerating or. like there's something wrong with me. And I'm like, no, I actually don't ever flake on people. Like there's been a few times I have and I'm genuinely very sick. Like if I'm sick, I try to work through it. But if like I remember, I don't think it was last year, New Year's Eve, I booked a gig and it paid like really good money, but I was so sick.
That was
like
2 years ago.
2 years ago, I genuinely couldn't get out of bed to go work it, but yeah. I wanted to. I was trying very hard. Like, I'm not the type of person to ever flake or not show up to work. And if I make plans with people, I don't flake. But, you know, that happens so often in this city, so often to me. And it's just, I don't know, that's just a normal way of life. I've been used to it, like you said, ever since I was a kid.
And it even happened, like, I never thought this would happen, but it even happened when news of my show broke, because conveniently and coincidentally, I shouldn't even say conveniently, but coincidentally, you made the decision to quit working at the place you were working at around the time that my show got picked up for its second season.
Yeah.
And so everybody at your work just assumed, like, oh, y'all are rich now?
yeah. Some people were like, oh, you just all good on money and that's why you're quitting. And I'm like, no, that's not.
Quitting because this place is shitty.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just LA. That's
the and then you have people reach out to you, be like, hey, I heard that you guys are doing well now. Can I maybe interest you in buying a house?
Yeah, I've had people do that. Yep.
Or, you know, whatever other fucking invest. I've had people.
People do that to you, I'm sure. But like people, I'm sure people assume like, okay, you have a show, so you're making good amount of money, so you can like pay for this stuff or you can afford this stuff. And it's like, no, not necessarily.
Yeah, everybody just kind of assumes that you are instantly a millionaire, and especially on your first deal. I'll say this: if I am lucky enough to have another show, mm-hmm. I'll be doing okay financially. Mm-hmm. But your first one. Don't ever expect to get rich off of it. I mean, unless you're lucky enough to where you're somebody like a Ricky Gervais, where the first thing is yours mm-hmm. and you own it and it's your baby and you have 100% control over it, then you probably do pretty well. But even then, I don't imagine Ricky made as much money on his first thing as he did on his next thing.
Yeah.
Because you have to build some kind of reputation, some kind of worth in the marketplace. You have to, it's kind of like your first show is always proof of concept. Yeah. Do people even want to fucking watch you? Do they care?
Right.
And all the feedback on Ginormous was people like me, but eventually the show is just like every episode's the same. Nothing's different. It just gets boring. Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah. And I think it's easy to get caught up in the mundane, what's the word I'm looking for? Just how they film things on certain channels like Food Network or Travel. They have a
formula.
Yeah. A formula. That's the word I'm looking for. So it's, you know, they don't want to stray from that because they're like, this works and we know it works or it has worked in the past. So they don't want to get too risque and stray away from that. And then it doesn't work. So you don't have a lot of creative control.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes I think, you know, one of the problems is I think the industry is guilty of this across all platforms, like social content, film, television, reality, everything. Mm-hmm. One thing blows up and then they think we have to make everything else like that.
Yeah.
So I think no matter what, and I love when people would compare my show to Man versus Food. It's like everything that comes out now is all Triple D. It's literally like Triple D is the biggest food show ever.
Yeah.
How do we make this as successful as that?
Right.
And I think there are executives who go, well, we need a character like Guy. So they go out and they try to find another guy.
Sure.
Or they go, oh, we need to follow the exact format, frame by frame. So like if 3 minutes in, Guy cuts to food, then all of our shows cut to food 3 minutes in. So I think they take these literal interpretations instead of just saying maybe the reason that Guy's show was and is so successful is because it was a perfect storm of things that worked. Mm-hmm. Like character plus format plus et cetera. And I think you have to look at every scenario that way and say, we have to do the same thing that we did with Triple D, but it's not the same thing. It's just we have to find that perfect storm of things that work. Yeah. I look at this and I look at, like, forget about me. How do you make a show with Hannah Hart, who has millions and millions and millions of fans, not work?
I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, you look at that and you just go, like, this, you know, how do you make a show with Jeff Dunham, who fills fucking arenas nationwide? Like, how does that not work? And I mean, my only sometimes thing is,
it doesn't always translate, like, just because you're a stand-up comic or you're big on YouTube, I mean, you never know if that's going to translate.
But sometimes I think people just don't, like, I don't think they ask the simple questions of, like, why do people want to watch this person? Mm-hmm. And then are we giving them that? Right? Like, I want to see Jeff be funny. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I don't think people watch Jeff's show is because there really wasn't a lot of opportunity for him to be funny, because it's very PG, very family oriented.
Yeah.
You know, and then same with Hannah's things. Like, Hannah, people love watching Hannah get drunk and talk about food and make food. And yeah. you have a show where she's not doing any of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think if you are going to bet on somebody because of what they've built for themselves, then, like, it would be like if you said, I am going to hire Conor McGregor to be a synchronized swimmer, and I'm going to put all my money on his ability to synchronize swim instead of hiring him to fight, which is what he is famous for and amazing at.
Well, I think, like you said, at the end of the day,
it's like putting a round peg into a square hole.
They're betting on that person. So they're not really betting on the show. They're just betting on that person. So
but it's got to be everything.
So if you're Jim Carrey and you're doing comedy for years and you go, okay, I want to get into drama, I mean, those studios are betting on, like,
yeah,
they want to see Jim Carrey. I mean, I don't know if it's going to work when he does drama, but we're banking on the fact that people gravitate towards him and that's what matters. So we'll take a risk on that.
But I think that works in movies. I don't think that necessarily works when you jump from one platform to another. Do you know what I mean? Like, you couldn't take Jim Carrey as an actor in film, as a comedic actor in film, and say, we want him to host a Discovery Channel show. Like, that's too many jumps in one shot, right?
No, I mean, they might do it because like, again, it's Jim Carrey, so he is someone people genuinely just love to watch. So
you don't let him be Jim Carrey, nobody's gonna watch for very long.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Well, in the case of,
if he's just doing his best Morgan Freeman impersonation, no one's going to give a fuck.
Well, I guess in the case of the Jeff Dunham show, like, it wasn't about Jeff Dunham. It's about the food. And that's, like you say, like, that's the star.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
he's not necessarily in the food world like his wife is.
Yeah.
So he kind of played second fiddle. I don't, like, you know, like, I know she was very interested, and he was there and he ate the food too, but it's not like his world.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the disconnect. Like,
yeah. But I think the hardest thing too is that people discount that it takes a little while to learn how to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes a little while to host a show like that because there isn't, like, a script supervisor. There isn't somebody handing you lines.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't even really a full structure. Like, there's a shoot schedule for the day, but I don't have a schedule.
Yeah.
It's literally like, hey, we're about to shoot this stuff in the kitchen. Go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, do what? Like, if I stood there in front of the camera, there isn't a show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if I just stood there and did nothing, there isn't a show. But so it's you like, gotta, it's, you, but it's on me to come up with.
Yeah. I mean, a great host is someone who can improvise on the spot.
Yeah. So it's all left up to, and by the way, if you're just not in that headspace that day, that segment's going to suck.
Yeah.
So it's like, you really got to, like, get your energy up and be excitable and have fun with it.
I mean, I think that's why, you know, Ellen wins so many awards and people love watching her, because she has to do that multiple times a day sometimes.
But
and
you don't think you see any real variation in her attitude from episode to episode?
Well, if you would let me finish, going to get there. I mean, I've been to her show more than maybe 5 times, less than 10.
Is this just water?
Yeah. And she's, you know, that's, you got to be on every single day. Like, she works hard and she shoots, I don't even know how many shows a year. And
150, isn't it? I think it's 150.
I don't know, but
maybe,
I mean,
it's 200 now.
I mean, yeah, like, I'm sure 99% of the time she's on and she's happy and, you know, she tries to leave whatever troubles at the door, but you can't always do that. And it's totally understandable. And I remember the second time I ever saw her years ago, I mean, she wasn't herself. Like, I don't know what happened. It was like someone maybe died. I don't know, but, like, her vibe was just off and she was really, like, mellow and she wasn't, like, dancing that episode. And something seemed really off. And I was like, I don't know what's happening today, but, like, this isn't normal. Cause I've seen her normally and she's cheery. She's always on. And, like, I mean, it's hard, and like that's a hard job to do. And yeah, you're not always going to be on, but I mean, that's why people love her, and that's probably why she gets so many like awards, her and her
but
staff.
Do you think that's part of the appeal too, is that you do get a slightly different flavor of Ellen every episode? Like, she's not the exact same person every day, so don't you think that's why people would tune in? Aside from just the fact that, like, this is a guest I want to see, this is a guest I don't want to see.
You're saying she's not the same every episode?
Yeah, like, the fact that there is those subtle variations in her personality and her demeanor. Oh, yeah. Like, don't you think that's part of what keeps it interesting?
I mean, I don't know if everybody picks up on it, though. Like, if you just love Ellen, then you watch her every day. Like, I don't know. Because, I mean, I pick up on it just because me and you probably pick up on, like, little, like, cues like that.
We think she's a super dark, cynical person that, you know, like, I don't think anyone other than maybe Portia and maybe the people she works with really know what a sick, evil, dark sense of humor I assume she has.
I mean, I think sometimes she, like, she'll be joking about something and it can come across like really like dark or rude if anybody else said it, but because it's Ellen and she's saying it, like, she can get away with it and we laugh and we love it. And so, yeah, but I don't know if people pick up on it. But I mean, I love that about her. I love that she's blunt and she'll say it to people's face, like, oh, do I get a portion of your check? Because I like blew you up on my show and now you're big on YouTube. Like, what's my portion of managing that? Like,
I love when she straight up was like, I get to name the Kardashian babies, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, yeah. But she'll deadpan it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I think sometimes people are like, are you serious?
Yeah. But really? She named Adam Levine's kid.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's Dusty Rose.
Oh, okay. Oh, what a weird name.
No, but she's like, that's her thing. She loves like picking out names for people's kids. Mm-hmm. So she'll do it. Yeah.
Probably the best way to never want to have your own kids. She's just like, I'll name your kids and I'll bring kids on the show. And I'll make kids famous, but none of them are coming home to live with me ever.
Well, she has this running joke with her staff that, you know, she's like waiting for someone to name their kid Ellen. She's like, oh, you guys had a kid, but you didn't name him Ellen?
Welcome to Ellen Insider, everybody. But yeah, I mean, going back to the point we were making about all that, it's tricky. And I think, you know, I think when a show has such a rigid format and you don't necessarily have the freedom to kind of mix up your personality or tone very much, then you're kind of handcuffed. Mm-hmm. And I think it can make the show feel like, oh, I watched this when I've seen them all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the numbers kind of supported that. Like, we'd have great numbers and then we'd find out like the tune out levels were coming up and up and up. And I think people would get in and be like, well, you know, the dishes are kind of the same. Like, I've seen they've already done a burger, they've already done a pizza, you know, so I don't need to see that. Or the pizza in the last episode was bigger than this one, so why do I give a fuck about this one?
Right.
So I do think there's some of that. But as I was saying with March of the Pigs, I think that it's run its course as well. And the other thing is, it's just fucking hard to get, I started to say this and we totally trailed off, but it's hard to get higher profile guests available for enough time to go eat lunch, come back, record an episode. I mean, it ends up being like a 5-hour day.
Yeah.
And so the exciting thing is, even though this is the last episode of March of the Pigs, we do have a new podcast starting in, I want to say March. I want to try to get it launched in March. So stay tuned for that. But it'll be a whole new podcast, whole new channel, whole new subscription feed, everything else. And do you want to? You're excited about it?
I like doing, we have this thing where we do a long yes from that Geico commercial. There's a black woman and she's walking down the hall. She spills her groceries and she's just like, yes!
Or she goes, yes!
I mean, yeah, you do it better. But
you got to get really deep on it.
Oh, it's so funny.
It had to be that black lady. She like nailed it.
Yeah, like a million people probably came into the audition. Everyone was like, the line's just yes. And she was like, okay. Yeah. And she was like, nah, I'm going to make this yes count.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely proof of someone making a bold choice in the audition and nailing it and getting that.
Yes.
By the way, I don't know if that was a buyout, but that commercial aired a fuck ton. And yeah, if she got paid per airing on that, she's loaded.
I mean,
she probably made like $200,000 off that commercial.
I don't know if she did, but
if it's a buyout, she probably still made like 50.
I don't even want to see anybody else in that commercial. I just want them to play her part.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, because there's like the Asian guy who's in all the commercials with the glasses. By the way, Tony Vinn, where the fuck were you on that day when they're just like, we're looking for an Asian guy to put in everything? Were you just not at the thing?
Sometimes I don't think he looks Asian enough, because this Asian guy in this commercial like has glasses. He looks really nerdy, like, you know, like Wayman from Workaholics.
He does look like, he looks like if Wayman lost weight and
yeah,
was
like,
younger.
Yeah, like Wayman from Workaholics looks really Asian, and like Tony doesn't look that Asian.
Yeah, but I thought.
Do you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying.
I think this is getting very out of hand.
All right, I should shut up now.
Very quickly. What are your thoughts on Bobby Lee? Asian enough or
no, I'm saying,
still straddling
I'm saying
the fence?
That, I'm saying these stereotypical nerdy Asians that they're looking for. Like, that's the look they're looking for in these like commercials and shows.
You know what's funny about that too is you mentioned that, and did you see Tony Vinn posted his outrage about the fact that there was a Monster headphone commercial?
Oh yeah,
where the Asian dude's like walking through the city and seeing everybody look at headphones, and then he's just like, I'll go back to apartment and make a better headphone
while I eat ramen.
He was eating ramen.
I don't know, noodles.
It
I don't know what
super,
he was eating.
I love too the like if like. If a black person walks by a watermelon stand in a commercial, people lose their shit. And this guy's literally like working in an iPhone sweatshop eating Nudo. And people are just like, yeah, it's a Tide ad.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It's like nobody gives a fuck. People get into these appropriation arguments all the time. I mean, the fucking Kim Kardashian braids. I went into a whole thing with people on Twitter about that. We're jumping around, but...
Anyway, so tell people what your podcast, or do you want to tell them?
Yeah, we can tell people what the podcast is.
Okay.
It's going to be called The Implications of Josh Denny.
I love it.
You like it?
Yeah.
Why do you like the name? You helped pick the name because we went through hundreds of names.
Yeah. Well, do you want to tell them what the reference is?
Well, part of it is because
I'm sure some people got it.
My favorite conversational tactic is to just lob up a fucking grenade and make people explain it. You know what I mean? Like and so to me, I would love to have a show that centers around that, of like where I would bring in like, let's say Bill Cosby, and I go, you've raped thousands of women. Let's discuss. Like, I would love to I want to just put people on the back of their heels and just say, you know, and that's like the most extreme example. But to me, there are other examples that would make sense where I would bring in let's say I would bring in somebody like, I don't know if I should say his name because I do want him to come on the show. But let's say I bring in an actor friend of mine that I really, really, well, now I can't say it vague because they'll all think it's them.
Just give a hypothetical example.
Okay, a great example would be if I brought in, we'll use the example of the podcast we just watched. We just watched Joe Rogan with Ben Askren, who was like, he's a MMA fighter, Olympic wrestler. Mm-hmm. And Joe basically started the whole podcast by saying, I think you're the best fighter to not ever fight in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And the whole episode kind of started there and went into other things.
Yeah.
I like that as a mechanism because it really allows that guest to explain their story and explain themselves right out of the gate. And it's enough of a feeding. You're feeding them enough of a lead to where they can kind of launch. And then you as a host can lay back and just sort of like let the conversation unfold organically.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great method. For somebody like a Rogan to be like, I think you're the greatest fighter never to fight in the UFC. Like, explain. And he said, well, do you want me to explain why I'm the best fighter? Do you want me to explain why I never made it to the UFC? And so they went through all of those conversational points. But I think it's a fun way to have conversations. And it's also fun for me because it allows you to be incendiary without having to do any research.
Mm-hmm.
So I could just be like, you are the best rapper of all time. Explain.
Yeah.
And somebody be like, don't say that about me. Like, I don't want to claim that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it is fun. Like, you bring in a Jennifer Lawrence and you just go, like, everyone thinks you're overrated. Your thoughts. Like, I just want to ask people. The thing that I want to know, and talking about food is cool, but we're running out of restaurants in LA that I don't hate. And B, it's sort of like one dimensional. I want to get to know people on a deeper level.
Yeah.
Like, I want to bring them in and I want to have more fun. Like, I think I'm at my best, and you can comment on this, But I think I'm at my best when I'm able to lay back and pick apart other people's shit.
You're just going to stop there.
Oh, okay. When I just lay back. See, you just did it to me. Isn't that more fun than having to lead the conversation?
Yeah.
To be able to lay back and go, yes, you're best when you just lay down and do nothing.
Do my best work just laying down.
Just laying down, barely awake, not snoring.
Well, that's not accurate. That,
but you just proved my point. That's a more fun way to talk to people. Yeah. It's more fun for me anyway, and I think it'll allow a little bit more humor to shine through in the podcast. So
yeah,
I don't want it to be stale or weird. But I do think there is a good chance that we could get some bigger names in here, and we'll get some bigger names. And I pride myself on being unafraid to talk about things that people normally don't talk about.
Yeah,
or wouldn't talk about.
Sure.
And so that's what I think it'll be. But the name itself, we batted a lot of names around, you and I,
mm-hmm.
and we came up with the implication.
I love it.
Because why?
Yeah, no, I thought you were going to tell the...
You can tell the story.
Oh, I mean, the reference?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a It's Always Sunny in Philly reference, if you've ever seen that episode.
Is the episode called The Implication?
Oh, I don't remember.
No, I think it's The Gang Buys a Boat.
Maybe.
Because isn't it the same episode with the horse massacre?
No, that's not. No. They're on like a ship in this episode.
No.
Aren't they?
The first episode is when they buy their own boat. And okay. Mac and Dennis go to the store and he's getting a mattress for the boat.
Yeah.
And then they go to the hardware store to get something else. Or they went to the boat store to get something else for the boat. And Mac comes up with this, or Dennis comes up with this idea that he's going to put a mattress in the boat and they're going to take chicks down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mac finds out that Dennis is pretty much a rapist.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, he keeps saying,
are they gonna do? Not have sex with you? You're out at sea.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go. And it's not that anything will happen to her.
It's just
the implication.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. Like, and basically just insinuating, like, I mean, what are you gonna do?
Like, I'm not gonna tell her I'm gonna murder her.
Mm-hmm.
But it's implied.
Yeah.
And that I think that's the hardest I've ever laughed at an episode of Sunny.
Yeah, that was pretty
funny. And then they call back to it when they go on a cruise, and he's just like, girls on a cruise. He's talking with Caitlin Olson, mm-hmm. D, about, you know, cornering a girl on a cruise ship and basically be like, where's she going to go? Like, right. We're out at sea. There's nowhere to go. And she's like, oh, yeah, of course. She'll definitely have sex with you because of the implication.
Right.
So she, ironically, D is the one who gets it. While everyone else rightfully is like, you're a fucking sick person.
Yeah, like you're being rapey, but okay.
Right, he's just saying like, they gotta have sex with you. Now, I have a question for you. Do you think if that episode aired now with this whole fucking Me Too movement that they wouldn't just get dragged?
Yeah, definitely timing is everything, and that would be a little risque. Yeah,
I like
definitely.
That. That's the most... That's an implication.
Yeah,
That's the most underselling thing. Well, they would be calling for that crew's head if they aired that episode right now.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes me sad. Because it's like, okay, we could do that like a year or two ago, but now we can't. Like,
well, it's also just that we're going to suspend.
Can we not see humor right. in any of anything anymore?
Right. Like it does make you wonder, like, are we moving in a direction where just nobody is going to like comedy?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like I just don't like that we have to dictate like what we can and can't laugh at. It's like, so if I think that's funny, like, we're just not supposed to air it because it's just not okay in society anymore. Like,
I just don't like that we assume things don't have an audience before we really know now. Like, yeah, you know, I don't think that network would ever give that a chance today. And that is historically one of the funniest episodes ever.
Yeah. I mean, people die from like suicide. Does that mean like we're not going to make suicide jokes in like media? Because we still do.
Murder.
Like workaholics, like Adam Devine, like he's hung himself. Well, I don't want to ruin it, but.
No, that's an old. That's an old episode. You can share that.
Oh, no. I was going to say something else.
Oh, is it? Okay.
But anyway, yeah, he's done it in an episode. And like, I don't know. Like, are we just like, there's certain, it's weird. It's like, you know, every like issue has its time. And then like time goes by and then we're kind of just like kind of over it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like a shooting happens and it's like gun violence and gun control is the issue and this is the topic at the moment, and then a year goes by and it's like not a big topic at the moment. You know what I'm saying?
Well, what I don't like is that we pretend that we thought things were funny back in the day because we didn't know they were wrong. Like, yeah. When you watch Blazing Saddles and he's grabbing himself around the neck and be like, I'll blow this nigger's head off.
Right.
Like, you know that's wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's still funny. It wasn't funny back then because you didn't think it was okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't watch Blazing Saddles and be like, all this racist and racial humor mm-hmm. is okay. Yeah. And that's why I'll laugh at it. It's because it's wrong that right. I laugh at it. It's like, right. And they're poking fun at the political incorrectness of those times, which was the old West. Like,
right.
So I don't understand. It's like satire is completely lost on people.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, It's Always Sunny in Philly. Like, they do stuff that's super like not okay, but that's why it's funny. Cause dude, they're
D made a guy get a lap dance from his daughter.
Yeah.
In the last season.
Yeah.
Like, that's totally, but the whole thing is that these are fucked up people.
Right. And that's why it's funny, because they don't even know or think they're doing anything wrong. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, we're not supposed to laugh at that
anymore? But it's weird too that, like, because we are getting into the appropriation conversation. I hate that fucking word, by the way. We are getting into the whole world of appropriation, right? Because people don't like it when it's comedy. They think you're poking fun of whatever the ailment is. Mm-hmm. But then if you do a dramatic reenactment of something, for instance, let's say you show people in a mental institution and people don't think it's accurate, mm-hmm. Then they say, well, you're just appropriating what it is to have mental illness for the sake of making your movie, mm-hmm. but it's not paying the right homage to people that actually have that problem.
Right.
And it's like, but the art isn't, that was never a contract of making things about this subject matter. Mm-hmm. That would be like if there were like really super old black people who were just like, the slave movies is not accurate. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, but there also have to be movies that people want to watch. Like,
right.
Like I told you, what was the one we just watched? Birth of a Nation. I was just like, God yeah. damn, how much more brutal and violent are these fucking movies going to be? And then
they have to make you emotional.
But they also have to raise the stakes because it's been done before.
Sure, yeah.
But I mean, like, the scene in that movie where they just are yanking the dude's teeth out of his head, I was just like, Jesus Christ, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
But it's not because I found it offensive. It's just because I'm not into, like, gory mm-hmm. shit. And I also think that that's the easy way to escalate the stakes in those types of movies. Mm-hmm. But to me, the more interesting stories, and I've said this a million times to people, like, why isn't anyone making a William Ellison movie? That was a slave master that was black. Mm-hmm. That would be an interesting story to me. Mm-hmm. That's a character with complexity and like depth and conflict, maybe.
Well,
I don't know.
It's like nobody's
interested in that story because
I think I told
it
you
it takes away the white people are evil narrative of slavery.
Well, I think I told you Taraji P. Henson wants to make the story about Emmett Till, and she's been trying for a few years, I think, to try to like make it. But we were discussing like, okay, but if that comes out, that's not going to help the narrative of women and
The woman. Well, yeah. And that's funny because you're talking about, now this is an interesting thing. You're talking about a movie that definitely indicates that a lot of the evil, this woman with a false accusation, if you don't know the Emmett Till story, Google that shit. But this woman with a false accusation essentially created 100 years of negative racial stereotypes about black men that have led to higher incarceration rates, wrongful convictions, wrongful accusations. And many, many, many years after this happened, it came out. She came out and was like, yeah, I made the whole shit up.
Right. So
while it's great for talking, for trying to get the conversation going about too many black people in prison, maybe wrongfully accused or whatever, then it also contradicts the women's movement of saying right. women always believe women.
Yeah. Like, but believe the victim, because right. we thought she was a victim for so many years. And now she came out and was like,
as a racist.
Yeah.
And she's just an evil racist.
Yeah.
Bitch.
And came out like, oh, no, I just made the whole thing up. So now we're like, OK, pause. So this is an instance where, yeah, maybe we should take a step back and hear all sides of the story and not just assume the first person or with a vagina to come out and say something is necessarily completely right. Because this is a case where, yeah, she wasn't. And you know, I don't know how that would
shift that idea.
I
love that story because of the human complexity in it. It shows that if we're going to be righteous in fixing one thing, then we might have to villainize this other thing that we also think is good.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some it is proof that everything is circumstantial. You can't just broad brush and say black people are always this way. Women are always this way. Like, you can't, men are always this way. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Because this is a circumstance where we did just believe the woman, and it fucking led to maybe a century of horrific perception of black men based on this case.
Right.
By white people. There is a generation of white people who think what they think about black men because of Emmett Till.
Yeah.
Because of that situation. Mm-hmm. So not only did she lie and ruin this dude's life, she also fucked up generations of environment for black men.
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely damning of women. But it also doesn't have to be damning of all women. If we were not the kind of society that just says one case makes, like, one data point makes the trend,
right,
this wouldn't be either of those things. We would just wake the fuck up and go, sometimes men lie, sometimes women lie.
Yeah.
Sometimes men are evil. Sometimes women are evil. We can't just broad brush everyone in society and say this is the code of conduct every time this happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to just work harder at being objective and just listening and hearing people out. And I mean, it's kind of funny that we don't really do that as a society because, I mean, I've never been to jury duty, but like when you go to be in a jury, like, don't you have to objectively hear all sides of the case?
Well, that's what voir dire is for. Like, voir dire, jury selection, is both sides trying to determine whether or not a juror is biased. And if the judge or either of those sides determine that a juror is biased, they are dismissed.
Yeah, but it's just weird because it's like in our government, it's set up where shouldn't you be like not biased when you're entering situations like that and you want justice to be served? But it's like, it's weird.
But you're talking about cases that are most cases are only tried in the court of public opinion. And there is no jury of your peers in that
situation. That's what I'm saying.
There is no presentation of facts. And the dirtiest thing about that, like, you hear these things all the time about Twitter and YouTube banning certain content. I think they should be banning any accusations of crime that aren't supported with a legal filing.
Yeah, it's just hard
to be. You shouldn't be allowed to go, Jimmy so-and-so raped me, unless there's a court filing or a press release from a court filing.
Yeah, it's hard to be innocent until proven guilty. Like, how?
Anymore.
Yeah, how?
It's impossible.
Right, so how are we supposed to continue to do that if literally people are just like, oh, I'm going to go to the media and say XYZ and that's it. And there doesn't need to be a trial you saw.
And people could go, Josh, you're being a hypocrite because you were all over Aziz Ansari when his thing happened. Well, I got to be honest with you. I loved when Aziz Ansari's thing happened because he brought it on himself. Mm-hmm. Like, he absolutely brought it on himself by trumpeting what a fucking good guy he was and how on the right side of things he was. And in a way, that bullshit facade is what gave this girl the fucked up expectations she had of him that made this date go off the rails so bad. People go, well, if she sucked his dick, where's his personal responsibility in that? Like, that's her choice. Agreed. However, she probably kept trying to suck the guy in the books and in the TV show out of him. Do you know what I mean? But he put this false sense. He created this image of, like, I'm the comic that gets women. I'm the comic on women's side. Mm-hmm. So she was probably thinking, and in this sort of traumatic way, that guy's got to be real. That can't be fake. He can't just be a douchebag like everybody else. Maybe if I suck his dick a little bit, he'll calm down and I'll get to meet that guy. And that's fucking retarded, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a girl and you think like that. But he is complicit in her thinking that way.
Mm-hmm.
He did build this world, this fake guy that is, I get women. I get how women are victimized. I would never do that. I'm Aziz.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is complicit in that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's absolute shit that she can just go to a website and go, this is my account. Mm-hmm. And by the way, what I just described is her being entitled to this version of Aziz that's not real. Mm-hmm. Which comes across in the very first comment about her going, like, I would have preferred a different wine. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so you're already an entitled bitch. Mm-hmm. And this is really about, you went in expecting to meet this character of Aziz that you created in your head, and it didn't turn out to be the real guy. Mm-hmm. And so now he's a piece of shit because of it. Like, you both did things that got you there. Mm-hmm. And that is a situation where I think both parties should be like, didn't work out the way we wanted. Mm-hmm. But should somebody be dragged into the spotlight and have their career ruined because both people went into a situation willingly and ended up being disappointed with the outcome? No.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
I just don't understand what...
I'm sorry, I'm not done mansplaining? No, yeah. I'm kidding.
I just don't understand what is there to be gained by telling this story right after he won an award and, what, a year? Has it been a year later?
Do you think the timing is predatory? Like, the timing was intentionally predatory to fuck up his... Well, moment in the sun.
It's just weird because if you guys talked about it the next day and he apologized and, you know, you were free to continue to talk about it, you had his number, like, you waited a year to mm-hmm. talk to bring this story out right after he won an award, like, that's just suspicious. And what are you gaining out of this? You're staying anonymous, and what are you gaining out of telling this story? Like, what did you want to happen?
Well, that's a perfect
example. If you want to talk about it to the person, you did, and you could have continued. In my personal view, I think that wasn't deserved of Aziz.
Do you think she should be allowed to do that anonymously?
Do what?
Give that testimony and have it published anonymously?
No, I just think that's like, I mean, I don't know what's considered slander, but like, you could just be telling an account. I don't know what's a lie. I don't know what's true.
I think,
but like, you're slandering someone's name, and like,
I think you're right.
I mean, I don't get it. Like, even if you do think he put up this facade of being a certain person, like, again, like, you could, as a woman, just be like, yeah, I don't want to go back to your place, or no, I'm not interested in sucking your dick. Like, just don't do any of it. Like, and who knows? Maybe he was just trying to, like, fuck, because she didn't say no, and maybe he didn't think anything was wrong. So I don't blame him in this situation.
Listen, I get in trouble for saying this all the time. I shouldn't even say I get in trouble for saying it, but I get looks when I say things like this. Mm-hmm. But it's honest. Every sexual situation every man has ever been in his life mm-hmm. could turn into that situation at any fucking moment. Mm-hmm. At any moment, a woman can, in the middle of sucking your dick while your friend fucks her, go, I don't want to do any of this. Mm-hmm. And now it's rape. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a very slippery slope.
But is it rape if you say no, I don't want it, and then stop?
This is the quagmire, though. Like, so the argument would be,
because the other person doesn't know it's rape if you don't say anything.
Okay, so let's say in the middle of the situation she goes, oh, I just realized I'm not into this anymore, we all stop, we just go, okay, we don't get it. But then she goes, well, I technically didn't really want to do it from the beginning. Yeah, and then the guys
then
go,
that's on you.
But you never told us that.
Yeah, then that's on you. You didn't
say
it.
I agree with you, but that's not what women think. Women think that's, if she decides afterwards that it was rape from the beginning, it is rape. That's the world we live in now.
No, that's not okay.
I'm just telling you, that's...
Yeah, that's just, again, nobody's a mind reader. Like, it could also go vice versa.
But
like,
there were nonverbal cues. Like, she couldn't fuck them both at the same time. She had a dick in her mouth and a dick in her pussy, but if she really wanted to fuck both of those guys, she would have done both at the same time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, maybe that's what she tells the judge.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's just...
You're just shaking your head in disgust.
Yeah, no. it's just sad. I don't know. Like...
It's sad that, again, that you can even have an article like that without naming the accuser. Like, that has to be part of the deal. I think if we agree on one thing, it's mm-hmm. that if you're going to attempt to ruin somebody through the press, you cannot do it anonymously.
Yeah, I mean, and Aziz is very taking like a classy move mm-hmm. of just like, okay, I apologize, and she's going to stay anonymous. I can easily say her name, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, and it is what it is.
Yeah, you're right. That is a big thing of him to not expose who she was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he you know.
Because he could have. And yeah. he could have, like, I'm going to sue her.
Sure.
But if he's smart, he'll sue that website and just be like, you can't do that. You just cannot. Yeah. You cannot accuse me of a crime.
Yeah, that I didn't do
anonymously.
Like, and I'm sorry, like, going back to what you said, like, sure, maybe there are women or men that, like, had sex that later they look back on and they're like, I didn't want to have that sex. Well, I'm sorry you realized that later and you came to that conclusion later, but that's not the other person's fault that you didn't tell them during. How are they supposed to know?
Do you think there's a right or wrong, or do you think that people are just being opportunists? So what I mean by that is the solution trying to change how people think? Or is the solution in going after the press to say you can't just let everybody come to you with stories and print whatever the fuck you want? Like, because to me, that's the way you fix it. And then if there stops being an outlet for this shit, then mm-hmm. it goes away. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can't get paid money to go to the New York Times because the New York Times says we'd love to print that story, but unless there are facts to check, we will not.
But that's the tricky slope, because the only reason these people are telling their stories is because there's publications and
that'll pay for them.
Right. And it's like, oh, come tell us your story, Stormy Daniels or whoever. Like, of course they're going to tell it if there's an incentive. Like,
yeah,
I mean, are you just going to go to every news media outlet and publication and be like, don't pay anybody? No.
Well, then you get into the slippery slope of like the Tiffany Haddish thing, right? Like, so apparently there's things in her book that are pretty accusatory of her ex-husband. And he read the book and was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this never happened. And then she even comes out and goes, well, you know, some of the stuff in the book, I was even like, what? But we got to sell books. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, we constantly talk about, like, you know, everybody wants to shit on Donald Trump when he says the press and journalism has no integrity. Mm-hmm. But like, you're in every fucking spot, news, the publisher of her book, like, they're exercising complete narrative freedom, whatever the fuck, they're exercising complete freedom to just say and print whatever the fuck they want to get the clicks and the views and the sales. Mm-hmm. If we're gonna live in that world, man, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous place. You know what I mean? And I think if I were Tiffany Haddish's husband and that were the truth and I knew I could win that case, I would sue that publisher. Mm-hmm. And if I were Aziz Ansari, I would sue that website. Mm-hmm. Because we cannot live in a world where the press has the authority to bend the facts and change the fucking world. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think when Donald Trump says it, he's being crazy. Mm-hmm. But there's tons of situations of proof where Donald Trump said, you printed this and it's not true and here's proof. And then they just go like, oh, well, you know, our facts say otherwise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's just saying like, well, okay, then you're fake news. And people love to just go like, you can't just say all the news is fake. But when you start to look at what drives what's even printed, every major news outlet, for the most part, is negative on Trump because that's what they think people think. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason. Mm-hmm. It's not because they also agree, and it's not necessarily because that's right. They're literally cherry picking the majority. They're going, most people don't like Trump.
Right.
We're going to write news from the perspective of people that don't like Trump.
Which is weird because he won. So wouldn't that tell you most people do like him?
Well, that's what you hear about the silent majority, right? Like, I had this conversation with a person in a political office the other day who's interested in me potentially speaking at some events. And I said, the reason that you don't hear more people bitching about things that are on the right is because that side won. They won. They got what they wanted. So yeah. Like, they're not the opposition party. They don't have to voice.
Yeah, they don't have anything
their heads are
to bitch
down.
About, yeah.
Their heads are down. They're working, mm-hmm. and they're happy. Right. And they're not on Twitter blowing shit up because they're getting their way. The same reason why the people on the left when Obama was in office didn't have shit to say.
Yeah.
And there are people that have something to say no matter what's going on. Like they find they're natural contrarians and they find something wrong no matter who is in office.
Yeah, I don't know. Back to what you're saying, what the solution is to, you know, not slander someone's name in the media and have it not have ramifications on their career, even if it isn't true. I mean, I think I was going to mention this, but like, yeah, like Michael Jackson.
That's probably the perfect example.
Yeah, and he got accused of child molestation, and then later people came out and were like, oh yeah, no, we just extorted him for money. And it's
But I guess the only difference in that is Michael was actually charged. Mm-hmm. And then he was found innocent.
Right.
And then the people came out years later and said we were only trying to extort him.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exonerate the 30 years that people just
made their
decisions on Michael Jackson based on that accusation.
Right. Which
like,
is,
we'll never know what jobs he didn't get.
Yeah.
What people wouldn't work with him because of a falsehood.
Right. And that's crazy. Like, how are we going to stop that from happening? Like, mm-hmm. people's reputation being tarnished just because word of mouth.
Yeah.
And like
hearsay. I mean, it's like in a courtroom, they would say that it's hearsay. It's not supported with fact.
Yeah.
And so, crazy. You know, it's
and also but also the, you know, the media influencing those jurors.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how do you as jurors just not hear or see anything in the media to influence what your decision is? And it's hard. It's like, OK, just don't listen to that. OK, but it's going to hit me and bombard me at some point. I can't go out in the world and not hear it.
Well, you know, it's a really interesting one and it's kind of benign, but this has already happened twice. There have already been two instances where celebrities have sued publications into mm-hmm. fucking oblivion.
Right.
One was the Hulk Hogan thing where he ended Gawker by saying, like, you guys have ruined my career. You've ruined my all-American Hulk Hogan image by putting this out there.
Yep.
And I've lost this much money. And what did he win? Like $100 million or something crazy?
A lot. Yeah.
The other one was Rebel Wilson, who sued that Australia tabloid for saying she's ancient and old. And she's like, well, I can just give you a list of every movie that I didn't get for the last 2 years and say that it's because of your publication.
That's crazy.
And she won.
How much did she win?
I think she won about like $70 million.
That's crazy. She must have some great lawyers.
Well, you don't have to be great. Like, it's just as simple as saying.
So why don't other celebrities just do what she did?
Well, I think you're going to see more and more people doing that, where they're just going to, where Aziz is just going to go, cool. So for the next 5 years, I'm going to write down on a sheet of paper every job I don't get. And I'm just going to assume that it's because of this false accusation of rape.
Or James Franco.
Or for James Franco, you know? And James Franco could honestly argue that it cost him an Academy Award.
Sure.
Because he didn't even get nominated.
No.
So.
But it's just unfortunate. Like, was he charged with anything?
He's never been
charged
with a crime.
That's what I'm saying.
James Franco's never been charged.
That's what I'm saying. So just.
And I think that's a huge difference between the Cosby thing and the Weinstein thing. And then the Franco and the Aziz thing. And even, by the way.
What about Woody Allen?
Well, Woody's a great example. Like, you and I went back and watched a thing. And listen, I've long taken shots at Woody Allen because he fits the part, right? Like, he looks like he would molest kids. And he did marry his adopted Asian daughter. But it's funny because when you watch the old interview on 2020 from, like, 1993, he paints this picture that, yeah, of course everyone's going to believe it. It looks like the perfect crime. It's really just an unfortunate series of coincidences that make it easy for me to look guilty. But her mother's fucking crazy. The kids' mothers are crazy. And here I am.
No, but the thing that stood out was, remember when he said, you know, I'm accusing you and...
You're talking about Mia Farrow accusing him of molesting... her youngest daughter, his youngest adopted daughter, because he didn't have any actual kids with her, just the one kid.
Dylan?
Ronan.
Okay.
I think is his.
Okay. But she said, like, okay, like, all these awful things about him, and then she turned around, according to Woody Allen, and said, you know, like, okay, so I'm going to show up for work in the movie.
Be in this movie that you're
doing. Yeah, you're making. And he was like, excuse me? Like, you're not in the movie anymore. Like, you can't be doing all these hurtful things and saying all these nasty things about me and you expect to show up to work? Why would you even want to work with me if all these things are true?
And when that part of the interview came out, you just looked at me and said, if he really molested your daughter, you wouldn't want to be in his fucking movie.
Yeah, like, it's just weird. Like, if someone molested me, my mom wouldn't turn around and be like, yeah, we're still
a deal's a deal.
Yeah, like, we're still, yeah.
She literally was like, honor your contract, Woody.
Yeah, like,
a deal's a deal.
Yeah, like, she'd be like, no, I don't want to ever be around you,
monster.
But
there are women that are like, why should she have to give up her acting job because she accused him of molesting their kids?
Yeah, but why? But why do you want to?
Why would you want to? That's my point too. Why on earth would you just? Why would you work with the enemy?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if someone molested me, my mom would never be like, yeah, I'm going to continue to.
I'll
just
finish out the week,
up.
But then
yeah.
on Monday you got some explaining.
Yeah,
to
it's really weird.
Yeah,
I don't know. That just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. That's really weird.
Well, the other one that was crazy too was when he had the receipts that she just told him through writing that she was going to accuse him of something horrific and get ready. Mm-hmm. So like she premeditated to him that she was just trying to take him down, mm-hmm. and then this thing came out, mm-hmm. you know. And it's one of those weird things. And you go like, people would go, well, you know, how could these kids live a lifetime believing something that never happened? It's like, well, kids are impressionable, man. Like, I mean, when I was a kid and my parents were going through divorce, it was a constant tug of war back and forth over who was right and who was wrong and who was telling the truth and who wasn't. And eventually you just get to the age where hopefully they let it lie long enough to where you can make up your own decision and make up your own mind. But mm-hmm. but if you're just getting hammered with one thing every day, then, you know, you begin to believe it yourself. I mean, put it this way. If that wasn't possible, nobody would belong to the Church of Scientology. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Or any religion for that matter.
Oh, we're going to be blacklisted now.
I'll be on any list.
The Church of Scientology.
Well, first of all, I don't necessarily know that I'm on their good list. By the way, how cocky Super Bowl ads, Church of Scientology.
Interested? Just, whoosh, 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 we thought
like
you were.
Fucking drone shots of the church and like upbeat music.
First of all, I don't even know. Yeah, the commercial was just random shots of stuff, and then
it was
the word,
like,
and then the word
fast, sexy, cool.
Yeah, and then the word interested, no, and then question mark,
curious.
Oh, curious question said, mark.
We thought so.
Church of Scientology, check it out. I'm just like, no, I'm actually not.
I
but
just
okay.
wanted to be like,
you didn't tell me anything from that commercial.
I just want to go. Y'all have no idea. Leah Remini's had a show for 2 years. Curious. All my questions have been fucking answered.
Yeah, I think.
Thanks, Leah Remini.
Yeah, I think I have all the answers according to Leah Remini. I'm good.
She seems pretty credible. And if you don't believe her, believe the 9,000 people on her show with their testimonials about how horrific the Church of Scientology is.
My family member's been missing since 1985.
Yeah. Just guess like... I won't have any of the Mastersons on this show. Mm. I would love to, though. I would love to just bring them on and go, what the fuck?
What? Is happening.
Explain it to me.
Tell me.
Your career isn't good enough to buy into this bullshit. Like, not everybody's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, if I were in on that cult and they weren't, and I wasn't as famous as Tom Cruise, I'd be like, when do you guys turn it on?
John Travolta?
No. Yeah. Okay. He's as famous as Tom Cruise. Okay. So you've named two. I'm sure they just go, you got to climb the ladder. You got to climb the rungs. Yeah. You're not at that. You're not. What are their things? Sea Org 9 or some shit?
Sea Orgs. Yeah. I wouldn't see. That's how I would. They would never get me because I get seasick. So never going to be on a boat.
Yeah. Well, I'm out. I can't. I'm not nautical in any capacity.
You have to get on this big ship. And that's how you climb the rungs. I'd be like, nope, I'm good.
You guys have like a landlocked version or?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
I pass.
That's what drives you to Islam is your fear of of aquatics.
Do love coupons.
Oh God, yeah, you do. I mean that's it, really. I just wanted to have an episode. We went to if we want to talk a little bit of food. We went to a great restaurant for your birthday.
Oh yeah, it was called Prosecco Trattoria.
Yeah, Trattoria. I don't know. Okay. I don't know that word. People say it. I hear everyone say it different.
Prosecco
Trattoria.
Prosecco Trattoria.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it
wine
was.
Wine restaurant.
Yeah.
Which is what I think it translates to.
Yeah, I think
to.
So. Champagne wine.
Yeah. Wine restaurant.
But no, food was amazing. Amazing Italian food.
Super reasonably priced.
Reasonably priced. Portions are big. Like, if I'm saying they're big, like, I eat a lot of food. So
yeah, you guys don't know. She's a fucking fat bitch.
Yeah. I'm kidding. I have a huge appetite. But no, like, everything was amazing. Huge portions, reasonably priced. Service was amazing. Manager was really nice. Our server was really nice. Nice, like, chill, calm atmosphere. We'll definitely.
Server's name was Jessica.
Yes.
Go in and see her. She was good.
We'll definitely be back. I loved it. Great. Probably some of the best carbonara I've ever had. And what was it? Pancetta?
Well, the there's pancetta in the carbonara.
Yeah.
But it was like a smoked pancetta.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So delicious.
It was a really good place. And it's like right in our neighborhood. It's right in Toluca Lake.
Yeah, so I would recommend it.
I wonder, you know what's crazy is that Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons live, I assume they live in that neighborhood, I mean in our neighborhood, because I know she used to live in our neighborhood and now they're together. I wonder if I shaved, if they would just assume I were him.
I mean,
I'd have to tan a little bit.
Tits are nicer.
My tits are nicer.
Yeah.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, Jesse Plemons. Listen, if we end March of the Pigs on any note, let the social media forces get to work. And I want you guys to make a tits off between me and Jesse Plemons happen.
Yeah. And I mean,
a tits off.
Yeah.
Hashtag tits off.
Tits off.
At Jesse Plemons, at Josh. I don't even know if he has a Twitter or an Instagram.
No, he doesn't, because I tried to tag
hashtag
him.
Tits off. Make it happen.
Yeah. Also, he can play a gay man and you can't.
I couldn't. I'd laugh. So. I don't know if he played gay, though.
He did.
He play it really
He was
well?
Having sex with what's his name?
Yeah,
from
no,
the
he was
office,
like trying to jerk off onto his chest. I don't think they were fucking. I went back and watched it 14 more times after.
Okay, I was like, how do you know? I couldn't tell.
I went back and watched it 5 times after you went to bed, and it was...
I forgot.
If I couldn't come to it, it wasn't gay enough.
I forgot the actor's name.
I can't remember, but he's the tall guy from Silicon Valley.
And he was on The Office.
Is his real name Zach something?
I'm blanking.
I think so. I don't know.
But anyway, they were a couple.
He plays Jared on Silicon Valley.
Yeah, they were a couple. It was a good movie. It was called...
Other People.
Other People.
Yeah, Maude Apatow is in it. Didn't I say that her upper lip doesn't move when she talks? Was I right? She's like, guys, you're being weird. I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, I guess I never really noticed. Yeah, she didn't have a big part in that particular movie.
Well, you know who didn't have a big part? The other sister.
The other sister. She had like 2 lines?
In the whole movie.
Wow.
And she was like a gateway. You guys got to watch this movie. It's called Other People.
It was a good movie. But sometimes I wonder why they cast people in movies sometimes where I'm like, that character person just didn't even need to be in the movie. Like, they didn't have any meaningful lines. They weren't, she had an under 5. She was in the family. Like,
yeah,
a lot of the scenes, but just like didn't talk.
She's probably in 50% of the shots.
Yeah, but she just didn't talk. Yeah. I was like, why was she even here?
Yeah, it was a weird.
It's really weird, yeah.
It was a weird thing to have. Like, you didn't need the other daughter.
Yeah, yeah, she was
just had Maude and Plemons.
Yeah, she was useless. No offense to that actress. I don't know her name, but I'm just saying, you didn't need to be in it. I'm just saying, like,
listen, it might be one of the biggest breaks of your career, but we didn't need you.
No, because you didn't have, like,
should we start a new podcast called That Movie Didn't Need You? Yeah. And it's just us talking about who doesn't belong in movies.
But I'm saying, like, I think she had an under 5 because, like, she was in a lot of the shots, but she didn't even talk. I was like, why are you here?
She literally was there just watching Maude Apatow and Jesse Plemons talk to each other.
Yeah.
And that was it.
It was so weird. It was strange.
It was an odd casting to be like, we need another daughter.
Yeah.
But
give her lines. It's weird.
It is. It's a strange thing. But anyway, so keep an eye out for the implications of Josh Denny. I'll be advertising it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It will still be on Blog Talk Radio, so I'm excited about that. And I think that's it. Do you have anything that you want to plug? You'll be on the couch doing nothing from now until forever. So if anybody wants to come see you at that.
I've been hitting the gym.
You should. You said that to be like, you don't even believe it.
Yeah, I know.
You should start a Twitch account that's just you doing nothing. Just live stream of you sitting and just looking at your phone all day.
Apparently, according to Smilf, I could just eat all the food and be a cam girl and people pay me to just eat all the food.
Yeah.
Because
I got to teach you how to work a camera.
Okay, you teach me and then I'll do that.
Yeah.
Make money off of that.
And maybe we'll stream the tits off between me and Jesse Plemons if we can make that happen.
Yeah.
A tits off. We'll do it at Prosecco Trattoria.
Yeah.
It's a very well lit restaurant.
You guys don't really look that much alike, honestly.
Yeah, we don't. No. But we're ginger men with a bit of tits. And I think we should decide and settle once and for all who has the best tits of the fat gingers.
Yeah, you have better tits.
We could bring in Casey Webb from Man vs. Food.
Okay. What other fat gingers
do we bring in?
Fat gingers?
Yeah. We'll do this like Nathan's hot dog eating contest. It'll just be fat. Which one of these fat redheads has the best tits?
I don't know. I can't think of other fat redheads that are famous.
All right, so it's a three-man dance.
Oh, Mario Batali.
Oh, no, we can't bring him in. He's too busy checking out other people's tits.
Okay.
Yeah, he could cater it. He could bring his sexual harassment cinnamon rolls.
Oh, my God.
For us while we have a tits off.
I'll try those.
I think of ponytails an unfair advantage in a tits off.
Why?
I don't know. It makes you more feminine. Makes your tits probably by nature look more feminine.
I won't let that happen.
You don't think so? You don't think if there was a sachet of ponytail, Mm-mm. you would go, those are real tits?
Mm-mm. I got my eyes focused on the tits. I'll judge fairly.
You can judge fairly. So
I assume I'm judging. I'm sorry. I've already gave myself that title.
You can judge, but then Kirsten Dunst can judge because she's got a horse in the race as well. Okay. A sausage titted horse. And then we have to have a neutral third party. I think Chrissy Teigen is the obvious choice.
Yes, Chrissy Teigen.
To decide. She's the only, I think, celebrity that would judge something like this.
I want to be friends with Chrissy Teigen.
Yeah, really.
She's one of those people I want to be friends with in the industry because she's a model and yet somehow has a cookbook and cooks amazing food and is funny. Probably the funniest model I've ever seen.
Yeah, she's great. If I could replace you with her, I would.
Wow.
But I don't have any Grammys. So.
But she has a kid. You don't want that.
Touche. Although if there's anybody who I could convince.
And another one coming on the way.
Well, if there's anyone who I could convince that we should eat their kid, it's probably Chrissy Teigen.
Yeah, she'd probably be like, I tried. They were delicious, but John told me to stop.
John pulled it out of my mouth halfway through. So yeah.
Stop it.
And I'm covered in cinnamon and sugar wrapped in bacon.
Yeah.
But John, he's a softy.
I'm just a fan after that McDonald's commercial.
I know. That's
your life. Like, ugh. She's who I want to be when I grow up.
John, you want to be John Legend's wife? I'll email him. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys. Hey, pig. Yeah, you. Hey, pig, piggy, pig, pig.